Next, chapter 26. The body of truth has no marks. The body of truth has no marks. Subhuti, what do you think? May the Tathagata be perceived by the 32 marks of a great person? Subhuti answered, yes, certainly the Tathagata may be perceived thereby. Then the Buddha said, Subhuti, if the Tathagata, if Buddha can be perceived by such marks, then any great king, any great imperial ruler, is the same as the Tathagata. Subhuti then said to the Buddha, ah, world-honored one, as I understand the meaning of the Buddha's words, the Tathagata may not be perceived by the 32 marks. Whereupon, the world-honored one, the Buddha, uttered this verse, whoever sees me by form, whoever seeks me in sound, perverted are his footsteps upon the way, for he cannot perceive the true Buddha. So this is an amazing, amazing teaching, outstanding teaching, great teaching. Everybody has their idea what is truth. Everybody has their idea what is the form. For a Christian, the form is only Jesus. Only Jesus. It can only be Jesus. Maybe some Christian people, it's Jesus. Maybe some other expression. But Jesus. The form. This man. If you don't follow that form, if you don't believe that form, this peaceful with hair coming down like this, and the beard, very... People look for that form. Very beautiful. And I love it. Always a white person. It's like some actor or something. Very handsome. Very clean. Beard is perfectly trimmed. You know, not some beard like this. Hair all messed up. But it's very beautiful. Perm, you know, very nicely. Perm and very beautiful. That is the image. For some Buddhists, maybe, also same thing. Maybe this Buddha. Buddha. This is Buddha. If you say to some people, you want to see Buddha? People go, huh? I don't know. Everyone thinks this form of the Buddha. It's interesting. When Buddhism went to America... The first tradition to go to America was Chinese Buddhism. Then eventually Japanese Buddhism went in the 1800s. And Chinese people have Chinese Buddha. Japanese people have Japanese Buddha. Then 1970, Sung San Kunsunim went to America in 1972, and he brought this Korean-style Buddha. Gold, bling. Shiny. And many American people are, ah, too shiny. That kind of Buddha, not so good. Then he was, you know, American people like natural things, wood, some nice kind of traditional, antique style, this old kind of beautiful, something that you'd see in a museum. Then, it's interesting, a couple of years ago, Sung San Kunsunim was teaching in Berlin at the Berlin Zen Center, and they opened a new Zen Center. And he went into the Popdang, the Sompang, and they had a Buddha there. And, no, they didn't have a Buddha yet. Actually, they said, oh, we want to make a Buddha here. And he said, oh, good, I will send you Buddha from Korea. I will send you one of I will send you wonderful Buddha. You don't have to worry about getting a Buddha. We will get you Buddha. I will get you Buddha in Korea. I will send it. But this European style, this German kind of style is... They said, no. We don't want this gold Buddha. We don't want this gold Buddha. And he said, oh, you don't want... And they said, no, here, we have picture. We are making Buddha. And it's this old wood, just an old piece of garbage wood that someone took this piece of wood and was carving it. And just this kind of strange-looking but very natural Buddha. And the German people were very happy. Ah, natural Buddha. This gold Buddha, too shiny. You have to put sunglasses on if you want to wear it. Too bright. So I cannot look at this Buddha. I must put sunglasses. Ah, Buddha's okay. So each person has their idea of a Buddha. I remember when I first came to a temple, I didn't want to bow in front of a Buddha. But that's just a form of a Buddha. That's not the true Buddha. It's not just a form of the Buddha. So many people were expecting Buddha to have certain marks. To be a Buddha, you had to have very long ears. You had to have certain kind of hair, this curly hair. You had to have a certain kind of fingers, certain kind of legs, certain kind of sanggi. Really? That's one of the 32 qualities of the Buddha. If you have this form, you're a Buddha. That was this old Indian idea. But if you don't have that form, you can tell a Buddha, no, that's not a Buddha. So even some people have said to me in Korea, oh, you know, that's very wonderful. You want to become a Buddha. But Western people cannot become Buddha because you have too much hair on your arm. Someone said that to me at one of the Cheongnim. Oh, you're very wonderful, but you have too much moritol. You have much tol. And too much, so you cannot become a Buddha. Buddha, one of the marks is, you know, very clean and something, 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 something. Then I said to him, yeah, but Buddha has blue eyes. You don't have blue eyes, so you definitely can't become. I can shave this off, but you can't change your eyes. So, this is all mistake. It's all mistake. Buddha has a certain form, that's a mistake. So, actually, originally Buddhism was very pure. There was no statue of the Buddha. Originally in Buddhism, there was no statue. There was no form. There was no Buddha head. There was no painting of the Buddha. There was none of that. But people, human beings become weak. Human beings' faith becomes shaky. So they need some form, something to pray to. Some sadhi. Some relic of the Buddha, some piece of the Buddha. It's very interesting. So our teacher's teacher, Kobongsunim, when he was about to die, they said, oh, if some sadhi appear, what should we do? If some sadhi appear, what should we do? And he just went, very interesting. When you burn a great monk, something appears. Maybe something appears. Many people believe this, that some special relic, a special sadhi, sharira in Sanskrit, appears. And that indicates how holy you were. So, recently in Korea, within the last 10 or 15 years, many great monks have died. And so, many people will look, oh, this monk died. How many sadhi? This monk died. How many sadhi? You know, the sadhi is a little like a little glass crystal is left over when the body is cremated. So when form appears, problem appears. Oh, this monk left this many sadhi. But this monk left this many sati, so he's a great monk. So that's a very interesting situation. And then people fight and argue. Oh, this monk, only few sati. He may be not so good monk. But this monk sati, shining and blue and beautiful and perfect and pure. So many great monks always say that's a mistake. So in this temple in Korea, there's one great temple that keeps this very strong tradition. It's called the Sudoksa. Doksungsan Sudoksa. Doksungsan Sudoksa. And in that tradition, they don't preserve anyone's sati. Because how can Buddha appear as a little form? How can this person be represented by a form? And this be counted, measured, evaluated? So this very great, this Doksungsan Sudoksa, they keep this very strong tradition. Don't touch that. Throw away. Everything is the Buddha sati. Everything is the form of the Buddha, not some special thing more than your eyes, more than your hair. So it's a very interesting tradition. So this is very interesting. The body of truth has no marks. It has no quality. It has no particular form. Truth has no particular form, no particular quality, category, style, religion, idea, expression. Some people think their expression of truth is true. That means every other expression is not true. That's where this two minds appears. Two minds appears. Two minds appears, then conflict. But Buddhism is not two. Not two things. So, the title of this chapter is The Body of Truth Has No Marks. The Body of Truth Has No Marks. So, do you want to understand the true meaning of this chapter? Actually, right until this moment, I did not explain this chapter correctly. I am very sorry. I did not explain this chapter correctly to you. I made a big mistake because I opened my mouth. I already gave it Hyanggaksanim's expression of this chapter. I just gave you a Buddhist expression of this chapter. I just gave you maybe an American style expression or a monk expression. That's already a mistake about this chapter. If the body of truth, if real truth has no particular form, no particular idea or category or shape or color or sound or smell, no particular kind of religion or color, if it does, then what is the true meaning of this chapter? What is the true meaning of truth then? Do you want to experience it? Who wants to experience it? Raise your hand. Oh, only one person. Two? Oh, that's good. We have at least two people who want to understand truth. So for Kwan Heng Sanim and our new guest today who want to understand truth, and I'm sure a lot of others of you who are very shy to raise your hands, if you want to understand what is the true body of truth, does it look like this? Or does it look like what I said? Or does it look like what Jesus said? Or does it look like what the Diamond Sutra said? If you want to know which one of those is truth, the true body of truth, it has no form. It's just what you experienced. That's truth. Okay? Very interesting, this Diamond Sutra. But more interesting than the Diamond Sutra that you're looking at on the page is what the Diamond Sutra just pointed to. It said, truth has no form. Truth has no shape or category. Can't be expressed. So, that experience was truth. and hearing my voice is truth. Understand? Okay, good. Chapter 27. Chapter 27 is very interesting. It is erroneous, it is a mistake to affirm that all things are ever extinguished. It's a mistake to say that things are extinguished. So, this is the Diamond Sutra. The Diamond Sutra is a representative sutra or scripture of the Mahayana Buddhist tradition. Mahayana Buddhist tradition came out of the Hinayana, the Sosungbulgyo tradition. In the Sosungbulgyo tradition, in the Hinayana tradition, we have desire, we have anger, we have ignorance, we have habits, we have karma, we have defilements, we have delusions, and they must be extinguished. These bad things, these impure things, must be extinguished. You must cut off. That's not only in Buddhism, in Christianity as well. A lot of you are, a lot of the people here today might be Christian. I know some of you are Christian. And in that teaching, some bad things must be stopped, cut off, eliminated, moved, destroyed. But this teaching is, that's a mistake. There is nothing to cut off. There's nothing to extinguish. There's nothing to put out, to eliminate. Very interesting point. Sabuti, if you should conceive the idea that the Tathagata attained the consummation of incomparable enlightenment by reason of his perfect form, don't make such thoughts. The Tathagata's attainment was not by reason of his perfect form. On the other hand, Sabuti, if you should conceive the idea that anyone in whom dawns the consummation of incomparable enlightenment declares that all manifest standards are ended and extinguished, don't make such thoughts. Why? Wherefore? Because the man in whom the consummation of incomparable enlightenment dawns does not affirm any formula, any dharma that is finally extinguished. So, this teaching completely hits the idea that there is a dharma to be extinguished, a desire dharma, an anger dharma. Yeah, dharma means all things, all principles, all happening, all sound is dharma, rule is dharma, thinking is dharma, all dharmas. So, if you have a view that there's a dharma to be extinguished, a dharma that must be stopped, the desire dharma, the anger dharma, the fear dharma, the anxiety dharma, the habit dharma, if you think that that is a real thing that has to be stopped, that's wrong. There is no dharma to be extinguished. Thinking that there's a dharma to be extinguished makes that dharma. But in fact, in reality, it doesn't exist. Sabuti, if you should conceive the idea that the Tathagata attained Anyutara Samyak Sambodhi, complete and perfect enlightenment, if you think the Buddha attained complete and perfect enlightenment by reason of his perfect form, don't make such thoughts. So that means, first, if you think that enlightenment only comes, that Buddha attained Buddhahood as a result of some perfect form, again, that time there were many people with attachments who thought you had to have this, you have to have this quality to be a Buddha, you have to have this quality, you have to be like this, you have to be like this, you have to be like this, you have to be like this. To become a Buddha, you have to be like this. You have to be like this. He was hitting that, you know. In the Sosung Bulgyo, in the Hinayana tradition, you had to be a monk or nun, but monk, really. You had to keep this precept only, completely, that dharma. You have to walk like this, talk like this. You have to just keep your eyes down, and keep your eyes down, and just walk like this. When I first came to Korea, I had a lot of interesting experiences, but one interesting experience I had, which continues a little bit, but it's not a problem for me so much, as a lot of people said to me, you cannot get enlightenment if you behave like that. I said, what? How? Behave like what? They said, like this. When you talk, you use your hands too much. When you talk, you know, this is the way I was raised in America. I'm sorry, it's not better, it's not worse, but it's... No. You cannot become enlightened if you use your hands too much when you talk. Some monks told me this. Some monks at some temple, I cannot say. But they said, you cannot get enlightenment. You use your hands too much. When you talk, why do you use your hands like this? That's not, you're supposed to. You should behave like this. I said, when I drink, I just... That's Buddha nature too. So, at that time, especially with the Hinayana Buddhist tradition, you have to have a certain form of something, a certain form of practice, a certain form of behavior, a certain form of something. Yet we see in the Sutra of the Sixth Patriarch, one reason they didn't accept the Sixth Patriarch. He went to the Fifth Patriarch. He said, I want to learn about Dharma. And the Fifth Patriarch said, hey, you are a barbarian from the southern area. How can you get enlightenment? Yeah, we have that in Korea as well. A certain form. Yeah? Maybe we think about northern people. Same. America has same mind. So, the Buddha said, if you try to think that my attainment of enlightenment was dependent upon some form, this form, the Buddha having a long ear, or because I was something, or Yangban, or that's not correct. That's why it's very interesting. Now you hear a lot in India, many, many, many lower caste people. What's this lower caste people become Buddhists? Because they know that Buddhism recognizes that a certain form is not necessary for enlightenment, for holiness. In India at the time, it's the Brahmin form only. The form of a human Brahmin only can be near to God and someone who's low. So a lot of the outcasts, quote unquote, though that's not a good word, for want of a better one in English, become interested in Buddhism because it recognizes it's not a form. This nature is fundamentally equal. So, Subhuti, if you should conceive the idea that the Tathagata attained the consummation of incomparable enlightenment by reason of his perfect form, don't make such thoughts. The Tathagata's attainment was not by reason of his perfect form. It had nothing to do with it. On the other hand, Sabuti, if you should conceive the idea that anyone in whom dawns the consummation of incomparable enlightenment declares that all manifest standards, all dharmas, all bup, are ended and extinguished, if you claim that everything is ended and extinguished in some way, desire is ended, anger is ended, anxiety is ended, that that is dharma, that's also the wrong way. Because that makes anger real. That makes desire a real thing. It's not. It fundamentally doesn't exist. The Heart Sutra says, no increase, no decrease, no beginning, no end, no appearance, no disappearance. This fundamental quote-unquote reality is like that. If you should conceive the idea that anyone in whom dawns the consummation of incomparable enlightenment declares that all manifest standards are ended and extinguished, do not countenance such thoughts. Wherefore? Why? Because the man in whom the consummation of incomparable enlightenment dawns does not affirm or claim concerning any dharma that is finally extinguished. Very interesting. Okay? So it's not, Buddhism is not, our practice is not about the extinguishing of a dharma, of a self-dharma. You don't extinguish it, a self-dharma, an anger dharma. You don't extinguish anger. You don't extinguish desire. You don't extinguish impurity. You don't extinguish ignorance. You don't extinguish anything. That's not true enlightenment. Insight into the fact that this desire dharma doesn't appear, doesn't disappear, that's enlightenment. Insight into the fact that this anger dharma doesn't appear or disappear, doesn't fundamentally exist, that's true enlightenment. Not extinguish, if it's extinguishing it, it's real. But it's not. Very interesting teaching. Also, one great teaching about this chapter 27 is, its teaching is about not attaching to a dharma of any kind. Don't attach to any dharma. Don't attach to a teaching that says that this works and attach to saying that that doesn't work. I like, there's this interesting movie, Mandala. This great, 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 who did that movie? Great, great, great movie. And in the movie, it's very interesting because there's this very, very, very holy, pure monk. Not eating. Harawe Hamkiman. One time eating. Very holy, very pure, everything very quiet. And then his Doban, his Dharma friend, is this completely wild, completely crazy, you know, always drunk, kind of, you know, his beard is always, his whiskers are always growing out like this, and I don't know, smoking and drinking and eating anything he wants, makheng makshi, this kind of no hindrance style. Then a very interesting point in the movie, they're in the situation, and they're in a temple, and this quote-unquote, not bad monk, this no hindrance monk is drinking. He's just drinking. And the holy monk is really disturbed by this. And outside, you hear, ba-bong, bong, bong, the temple bell for Yebu, for chanting, bong, bong. And this holy monk, listening. He says to the Dengcho style monk, this bad monk, he's like, Sanim, it's time for Yebu. You must. And this monk is just, he's just. But he's very clear, this bad monk. Sanim, this is not correct. Put that away. The bell has started ringing. We must go to the temple for Yebu. We must go to Yambul. Yambul, which in Korean means calling the name of the Buddha. Looking for Buddha. Searching for Buddha. We must go search for Buddha, basically, is the meaning. And the no hindrance monk says, he says, he's not really drunk, he says, like this while he's drinking, he says, you look for Buddha in the Popdang, in the Dharma hall. I look for Buddha in the bottom of this glass. So very interesting teaching. No one is better than the other. Each has their Dharma. The holy monk style, holy Dharma. This drinking monk style, drinking Dharma. But he really got something so he can do this. It's not just drinking just because he wants to. He got something in his practice, something, some insight. So this is possible. So it's the same Dharma. So this teaching is, it's erroneous to affirm that all things are ever extinguished. So this means that there's no particular Dharma that leads to Buddhahood. There's no Dharma that prevents Buddhahood. This is very important. There's no Dharma, there's no one Dharma that leads to enlightenment. There's no any Dharma that prevents enlightenment. This is a very important teaching. It's interesting, I once went to Malaysia. And this teaching of this chapter is very interesting because it says that there's no one Dharma for getting enlightenment. There's no one Dharma, one tradition, one teaching for enlightenment. There's many, 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 many in this world. Kwansambosal attained enlightenment just by hearing. Just by hearing. Got enlightenment. So I once had to go and teach in Malaysia. I think I told this story once before in one of our Dharma talks. And when I was teaching in Malaysia, I was staying in a Chinese temple. Chinese temple invited me to go. And the Chinese temple was located in the middle of this huge Muslim market. Big market. Very loud. And it's very interesting because the whole temple completely smelled like fried chicken. Because they're in the market, you know, selling this, they're heating this hot oil and making maybe falafel and fried chicken, and I guess can't eat pork or whatever. So there's this very intense smell all the time. Very interesting. In the temple, you didn't smell incense. Very strong. I couldn't smell fried oil for like 2 weeks after that. Very strong. Sleeping. All you can smell in your sleep is this fried oil. But it's very, very wonderful atmosphere. Very beautiful. And of course, five times a day, this call to prayer is amazing, amazing. So this Chinese woman came to me one day and said, "Oh, Sunim, I have a friend. He's a Muslim friend. He wants to talk with a Buddhist monk. Can he meet you?" And I said, "Yeah, of course. Do you have some beads, 108 beads? Do you have some 108 beads? Can I borrow them?" And he said to this Chinese Bosanim said to me, "Oh, Sunim, my friend, this Muslim, this Malaysian Muslim, he wants to talk to a Buddhist monk. He has some questions. This man is a very educated lawyer, and he's traveled all over the world doing legal stuff, and he has read books about Buddhism. And he's read in these books certain teachings of Buddhism, but he feels that these teachings of Zen Buddhism especially, are very close to his experience. But he can't talk. All of his friends are Malaysian, Muslim, and he can't talk with them about other religions. It's not permitted. It's maybe permitted to talk about other religions, but not maybe in an approving way, how much it helped him." So he said, he wants to talk to a monk, but he can't come to the public talk because if people see him going to this public talk, he has a problem with his friends. They will think there's some rule. He'll be betraying Islam or something like that. So I said, "Yeah, no problem. He can come." So we set aside a certain time, and I was sitting in the temple, and he came maybe 10 o'clock in the morning. So he came, very interesting man, very well-dressed, and he's very intelligent, very interesting person. And we talked. And I noticed while we were talking, he had these sorts of beads. He had these beads. And I had a set of beads too. And while we were talking, he was, you know, holding his beads like this. He was kind of doing this. And you see sometimes when you see maybe some of the pictures from Iraq or the Middle East, you see men in coffee shops, especially older men, are sitting there with the pipe. You know, and they're talking together or playing some game or something like that. And I'm not too familiar with the culture. I should be, but just doing the beads like this. Same beads. Looks like it's pretty much the same. Or in cars, too. And I remember some of our Israeli, some people came from Israel to the Zen Center here. And we were doing bowing. And they, you know, you use these 108 bows, the 108 beads for bowing. This is to count your bows. But they said when they went back to Israel, some of them, they had a problem. Because Muslim people use these. So there is other Israeli friends said, hey. They didn't know this was a Buddhist use. Says, hey. Who? What are you doing with those beads? It was a little strange. So anyway, this man came in. While he's talking to me, I noticed that we had the beads. Then we were talking about this and talking about that. And then he said, oh, yes, Saneem. He said, oh, you have these beads. What do you use them for? And I said, oh, yeah, we do this chanting. We Om Mani Padme Om, 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 or Kwanzaa Bozo, Kwanzaa Bozo, Kwanzaa Bozo, Kwanzaa Bozo, Kwanzaa Bozo, Kwanzaa Bozo, or Shimyo Jingu De Dada Nina Mara Nana Nana Gebe Roke Jisabara Ema 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 Jisabara Ema. He said, oh, yeah, we do that too. I said, oh, yeah? How do you use your beads? And he said, oh, yeah, in Islam, we have, I don't remember correctly, but we have maybe like the 100 names of Allah. 100 different names of Allah. So he said, maybe it's 104 or 100 and some, 100 something. And he said, so many people, we repeat this name over and over and over again. I don't know. I'm not making fun of it. I'm making a joke about it. It was something like that, but Allah Ach, Allah something. Over and over and same. Like we did. In fact, he said some of his friends do two sets of beads at the same time. They're doing one so much that they can also do another one at the same time. At the same time. So I said, wow, that's amazing. He said, yeah, we sometimes, and this man also, this lawyer, he said, sometimes you completely experience, there's absolutely, completely becoming one with Allah. Completely meeting Allah. Completely experiencing this universe as one. Nothing. So, oh, wow, I was very grateful. Wow, that's very wonderful. We do the same thing. And then he said, so, Saneem, I have a question for you. It wasn't a challenge. It was really curious. He said, you know, sometimes you in Buddhism, how do you express this Buddha if it has no name, it has no form? That experience of completely becoming one with Buddha, you know, if you say Buddha, it's already a mistake. So how do you express it when you sometimes have to give expression to it? And I went, and he went, and I thought, oh my God, I made a mistake. I did something wrong. But he was happy. He was crying, but completely, oh, thank you. Oh, I was waiting for that. My same experience. That's my same experience. So he saw his practice and my practice, our practice, boom, arrive at the same point. So, there's no one dharma to get to this point. Actually, all of you already arrived. All of you already experienced. Everyone, man, woman, Korean, American, Canadian, French, Christian, Buddhist, Catholic. In this moment, everyone's mind is the same mind. Sound of the meme, sound of the cicada, sound of the birds, the sound of the fan. In that moment, everyone's mind has the same substance. It's the same experience. So, that's a very amazing point. You don't need a certain dharma to get there. Meaning, other dharmas don't get you there. That's a very important point. So that's the teaching of this chapter. If you want to know what the meaning of this chapter is, attachment to rewards of merit. Chapter 28. Sabuti, if one bodhisattva bestows in charity sufficient of the seven treasures to fill as many worlds as there be sand grains in the river Ganges, and another, realizing that all things are egoless, attains perfection through patient forbearance, the merit of the latter will far exceed that of the former. Why is this, Sabuti? It is because all bodhisattvas are insentient as to the rewards of merit. All bodhisattvas don't care about the rewards of merit. Then Sabuti said to Buddha, what is this saying, world-honored one, that bodhisattvas are insentient as to rewards of merit? And Buddha answered, Sabuti, bodhisattvas who achieve merit should not be fettered with desire for rewards. Thus it is said that the rewards of merit are not received. The rewards of merit are not received. The last time you did something good for somebody and someone said thank you, where is that? Now. But that's interesting. True merit is just this moment. True merit is just this moment. Even someone thanks you 1,000 times or doesn't thank you at all, you know what? You got the same thing. Nothing. But so, we're always calculating what we get. I get this, I get that. If I get this, I get that. I get this, I get that. I get this. Nothing. See? But, rather than attaching to the reward of merit, if you return to this moment as it is, that's already the highest merit. Because where else can you live? Where else can the merit of this life, your sentience, your sentient nature be realized, except when you see, when you hear, where you when you smell, when you taste, when you touch. That's all. So, very simple meaning to this chapter. It's not that deep. Attachment to the rewards of merit is a false dharma.